You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, July 19th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Glenn Ford, executive editor of the Black Agenda Report, on the question, is President Obama the lesser of two evils or the most effective evil? Also on the program today, how's that Republican disenfranchising voters project going across the country? We'll give you an update. Meanwhile, the post office, you know, that huge teat-sucking organization that takes no tax dollars but has been given a special burden by a Republican Congress back in the day, which in no way enables people to do business in this country, right? Those businesses that send out those bills, well, they could just do it by carrier pigeon, privatized carrier pigeons. On the brink of, well, defaulting on some payments. Also, Republicans upset about new welfare rules because it could actually help people. And in Kansas, we've got a real live experiment with what happens when you destroy the revenue stream from taxes, and watch how it will magically create new revenues. That's called addition by subtraction, except for it doesn't quite work that way. We shall see. Update on a couple of stories yesterday. Of course, yesterday there was a suicide attack which killed the Syrian defense minister and other top officials in Syria fighting in Damascus today. President Bashar al-Assad hasn't been seen, as one might expect. Reports said officials had been killed by a bodyguard in a suicide bombing in Damascus. Other reports said the device was placed within the building. It's not quite clear. I think now they have determined that it was not a suicide bombing, but not quite clear yet. The bombing took place at the National Security Building, which is a headquarters of one of Syria's intelligence branches. So obviously the fighting continues in Syria. And late-breaking report from Bulgaria, suicide attacker killing, depending on whether you believe the Bulgarian or the Israeli reports, anywhere from 5 to 7 people of Israeli tourists in Bulgaria. The Bulgarian media today is reporting that the suicide bomber, and this is only confirmed insofar as it's the Bulgarian media, was a Swedish national named Mehdi Ghezali, who had been in Guantanamo Bay from 2002 to 2004. He supposedly had studied at a Muslim religious school and mosque in Britain, traveled to Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. He was supposedly among 12 foreigners captured trying to cross into Afghanistan in 2009. He was supposedly in Bulgaria with a fake American passport and a Michigan driver's license. So this is going to perhaps put a little cold water on Benjamin Netanyahu's accusation of Iran being behind this, but who knows? And of course, the Iranians have been saying that they would strike back against the Israeli, well, the alleged Israeli assassination of a series of nuclear scientists over the past 5 years. So this is just a late-breaking story. Wanted to inform you of that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Glenn Ford, sort of almost part two of our series of debates, that one that I had with Bill Scherer, arguing, I guess one could call it the pro-Obama position. I'm not sure how this one will shake out, but we will be back in a minute talking to Glenn Ford, the executive editor of Black Agenda Report. Be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program the executive editor of Black Agenda Report at blackagendareport.com, Glenn Ford. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Thanks for the opportunity, Sam.
So, Glenn, for I don't know how long, over the past couple of months, I've been talking about the upcoming election as the choice of between the lesser evils, essentially. I know that and I've read the piece that was a presentation that you gave at the Left Forum entitled "Why Barack Obama is the More Effective Evil." And tell us, just lay out for us the argument in this case as to why Barack Obama is the more effective evil.
He's the more effective evil in a nutshell because there is no effective opposition to the evil that he brings about. That is, progressives and certainly the most progressive group historically in the United States, that is black folks, have basically collapsed in terms of any resistance to his right-wing politics. And therefore, he is able to accomplish that which George Bush or a John McCain or Mitt Romney could not have hoped to accomplish. At the top of that list is preventive detention. George Bush claimed, it was his opinion, that he asserted that the office of the presidency had inherent powers to jail people without trial or charge. He made that claim, but that was just a claim. He never even tried to get that codified in an explicit bill through Congress because he knew that he probably would be defeated. The Democrats would have fought that kind of power in the hands of George Bush. Ooh, that sends chills down people's spines. But Barack Obama pushed it through and signed it into law on New Year's Eve of last, effectively nullifying much of the Bill of Rights. That ranks him as the more effective evil. I don't believe a Republican could have accomplished that. I don't believe that a Republican could have gotten away with waging war undeclared for 7 months along with his NATO allies against Libya and then coming back and saying that it was none of the Congress's business because, well, it really wasn't a war. And it wasn't a war because supposedly no Americans got killed. And there we have a new Obama doctrine, and it ain't no Bush doctrine. It's not a Republican doctrine. It's an Obama doctrine that no war exists unless Americans die in some significant numbers. This means that Barack Obama has given himself the power to use military force against anybody without provocation in the world and not even report to Congress about it as long as Americans don't die in significant numbers. That's not a lesser evil. That's a much more effective evil. And we could go on down the line. There's about 4 more very important categories, but I'll take a break and give you a chance to talk.
I think tend to agree with that. I mean, I think that I have less confidence that in those particular areas that a Democratic, presuming the control of Congress by a Democratic, House, let's say, or a Democratic Senate, would have really been, particularly on those national security issues where I think Democrats are particularly sort of timid in sort of asserting what should be more legitimate policies. I tend to believe that, you know, under a John McCain, let's say, or a George Bush, that the Democrats would have put up much of a fight. In other words, in terms of Libya, it wasn't just incumbent upon President Obama to report to Congress. It was incumbent upon Congress also to assert their power in a way that I'm not convinced they would have done with a John McCain, let's say, or a President Bush. I do think that President Obama has codified certain things in a way that Bush never felt was necessary because they believed in a unitary executive theory that allowed them to sort of play fast and loose with these things. But did
not test it. If they believed, if they were confident that they could have tested it legislatively, they would have. They were not confident.
I think the Bush administration felt that they specifically didn't have to test it legislatively because the power was inherent in the executive. And I think I think there's a very strong case that it's more problematic that these things are being codified and brought into the sort of the scope of rule of law in some fashion because they have more staying power, frankly. And
actually, with the passage of the law by the Congress, we then have the executive branch asserting the inherent power. We have Congress passing actual legislation, and that makes the prospects of the Supreme Court, this court or another court, ruling this unconstitutional much more remote.
Right.
That was a huge line that was passed. But if you want to get domestic, let's do so. From the very beginning, that is before he was even elected, Barack Obama proved that he was the more effective evil. If you remember, the Bush bailout bill in October of 2008 failed. I remember it failed on a Monday. And Barack Obama flew into the rescue that week and got on the phone, called not just everybody in the Black caucus, but every Democrat he could get a hold to. And by Friday, that verdict had been reversed. It was recognized at the time, and I'm going to remind folks now, Barack Obama saved George Bush's bailout bill. If you think that bailout was evil, and I do, the circumstances show that Barack Obama was certainly the more effective evil in that regard. Before Barack Obama even took the oath of office in January of 2009, he put Social Security and other entitlements explicitly on the table. He held a press conference and told reporters that's what would happen under his regime. And remember, the Republicans were probably at their lowest ebb in decades, demoralized. People were talking about a party that might never get up off of its back. So they were in no position to press forward on Social Security. Remember that George Bush got his butt whooped decisively in his first term on Social Security, and the Republicans had very, very little to say. They didn't even want to broach that subject after that huge defeat. But who introduces it? Who puts it on the table even before he takes the oath of office? Barack Obama. And then he appoints this deficit reduction commission and makes austerity a bipartisan issue at a time when the Democrats controlled both houses of Congress, at a time when the Republicans were still demoralized and not very aggressive on this issue that they've been whooped on not too long ago. So he is the architect, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of the politics of this, of bringing austerity back as part of his grand plan of bipartisan agreements between business and government, certainly not business and labor, since labor is not even in his equation, except in terms of getting help for reelection.
All right. So, and you know, I mean, I agree, and I can go through a list of, you know, we know the reports from the Washington Post that he's put this grand bargain on the table, and really, it was only because of the just how far to the right the Republicans have moved that basically prevented the President Obama's attempts to cut Social Security and Medicare, frankly, that
he made them an offer they shouldn't have been able to refuse.
Yes,
and
indeed.
They did, and that's the only all that saved us.
Indeed. All right,
that's
so
the only reprieve we've got.
So here's the question.
Reprieve,
I mean, going forward, you know, the question that has been dogging me, and I think the question as I have been struggling with, and for the moment, let's presume that I'm not voting in New York State, which I am. So I have a certain latitude in terms of the way that I will exercise my vote. But going forward, the question for me is: Can you outline how, I guess? I mean, you know, as far as I can tell, we have two choices in this election as to who at this point have a reasonable chance of winning, and it's either Romney or Obama. And for me, the question is, what is going to bring about the best outcomes from a left perspective? And so, can you tell me, like, what the best outcomes from a left perspective would be? And then
the best outcome for a left perspective would be for there to be a left that acts like it's alive. The worst outcome from a left perspective is for the left to remain quiescent, dormant, looking quite dead. That would be the best outcome. What happens in the future will depend upon resistance to these two corporate parties. Nothing good comes out of either one of these formations, which answer to the same corporate masters.
Well, now, so now, from my perspective, you know, just you know, observing what has taken place over the past decade, let's say that. One of the things that I found during the Bush or that I have sort of come to perceive in retrospect during the Bush administration was that the left in some ways was subsumed by sort of partisan opposition. And one of the things that I think that the Obama presidency has done is to at least stake out what is a genuine left position versus what is a partisan position. And frankly,
you mean an anti-war movement as opposed to an anti-Republican war movement?
Indeed. And both also on and in particularly on economic terms. I mean, the most relevant arguments I've had about why Social Security should not be cut have been with people who 6 years ago we were both arguing against President Bush's attempt to cut Social Security, to privatize it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious as to your perspective on that.
Well, there is no question that the broadly speaking, the Occupy movement changed the conversation. That is, we had Obama and his Democrats speaking austerity, and of course the Republicans speaking austerity, and the voice that interrupted that. Dialogue of the same was the Occupy movement, and you are correct for that kind of principled kind of dissent to arise under a Democratic administration as a not masking itself as something else under Republicans, and not a move on kind of. opposition that gets torn down and dismantled as soon as the Democrats in power, that is a good thing. That is cause for hope. Let's get some more of the same. You seem to be saying then that the best chemistry for that kind of actual principled opposition is under a Democrat as opposed to a Republican?
I mean, I tend to believe that. I mean, because I saw 8 years of Bush, and you know the choices we had at the end of the day, essentially in terms of you know, by the time we get to January in the primary in 2000, I guess eight. Is Edwards, Clinton, and Obama. Now, I was an Edwards supporter at that time, and he didn't make it past, I think it was January or February, and putting aside the implications of what would have come about had he made it beyond that, the choice it seems to me that this rightward lurch and to be sure it wasn't just under it was handmaiden by Clinton and of course in Reagan and even arguably Carter before that. Delivered us essentially a corporatist who was perceived because of both I think his profile and some of his pronouncements to be a semi populist savior my fear is that under, you know, contrary to an argument that I see out there by some, I'm not saying you're making this argument, is that 4 years of Romney will somehow bring about a more vigorous left in this country. And my experience has been it was the opposite.
Oh, I don't predict that it will bring about a more vigorous left. There's just a chance for it. You see, there will be no progressive revival if black folks are not deeply involved in it. By my reckoning, and every 5 years or so, I do a calculation to satisfy myself as to what percentage of the population is reliably progressive, and it always came out to about half of that proportion is black. There is no possibility of a successful or a vital, rather, progressive movement without the active participation of the most historically progressive group in the country, and that's black folks. And as long as Obama is there, black people will be neutralized. The black folks are less relevant today politically than they have been in 40 years, and that's because they make no demands, and they make no demands because they don't want to embarrass this first black president. So yes, you have the stirrings such as the Occupy Wall Street movement, an overwhelmingly a white movement, but you don't have those stirrings among black folks, and you won't as long as this guy's there.
But isn't the isn't that problem of co-optation even is it seems to me, I guess my argument is that under a Republican administration, that co-optation takes place not just amongst black people, but also that other half of their sort of more progressive cohort, you know, in that group of progressives. I mean, I see sort of just broader co-optation that ends up getting sort of channeled into a partisan mix. I mean, it seems to me what has to happen is that that part of the black community that makes up that progressive or truly left movement in this country needs to sort of assert themselves as well as the remaining people in that cohort have to assert themselves in the context of a Democratic president, that we have a left that is actually sort of growing up not as a function of partisan politics, but as a function of ideology.
Well, who could argue against that? What I'm telling you, we in the Black Is Back Coalition organized in 2009 to make the kind of public statement that not all black folks had drunk the Obama laid, but we see it in the stats that still he gets overwhelming support, and that is not going to change. But you know, you have maneuvered me into talking about, you know, what are the prospects here for the left. I do want to go back and say what Obama has actually accomplished, which is evil, is scary enough. And it is more in some fundamental ways than that which Bush accomplished, certainly, and which I think any Republican could have accomplished. So there is reason to oppose Obama based upon his actual practice and evil accomplishments. I don't know how you best, how you pull a bigger one than preventive detention, but I'm sure there are ways.
How about lying us into a war where we kill 100,000 plus civilians?
Sure, those possibilities are endless, and he's capable of pulling it off, I believe, more effectively than the Republicans are.
I mean, I don't see that. I mean, I don't believe that Al Gore would have had us in Iraq in that way. Now, I'm not saying that Al Gore wouldn't have gotten us involved in other conflicts, but I don't see that, and maybe I'm blind to that. But at the same time,
we are looking right now at an offensive that is just as historically significant as 2003 in the Middle East. The war is is on. The invasion of the penetration, military penetration of Africa is on. I think that.
But do you really think that
American
Mitt Romney is not going to pursue this? You think Mitt Romney's
aggressiveness in the world today is as intense as it was in 2003. But what he does is he uses proxies. He has air wars such as with Libya, so that there aren't lots of U.S. casualties piling up. He's very, very careful not to get involved in conflicts in which there would be massive U.S. casualties. But the damage that he is doing to peace in the world and to stability is on a par with Bush 2003.
I'm not sure I agree with that assessment. But do you really think that Mitt Romney is going to do any less? I mean, do you think that
Mitt Romney will meet resistance, and he's not going to do any more?
Okay, I mean, it's a hard calculation for either one of us to make in that instance, and so in when you look at something, let's say like
He'll have stuff to build upon. He already has an Obama doctrine. If Americans aren't killed, it's not a war. He certainly will easily step into that. It's easier for Romney because Obama has
indeed
been here.
Indeed. I mean, I'm not doubting that, but it's also the trajectory, I think, of this country, regardless of Obama or not. I mean, I don't know who. I don't think that John McCain would have made it any more difficult, frankly, for Mitt Romney, in this alternate history to attack Iran, let's say.
I think that
if we hadn't already. But
I think the rulers of the United States made their move, rolled the dice in 2003 because they felt that they had to. They looked down the line and they saw the growing isolation of the United States, and they saw the United States could not compete and only stood a chance of not being washed into the dustbin of imperial history by using its military force. And Obama's doing the same thing, and for the same reason. So, yeah, in that regard, they're the same, and I think they're behaving the same.
Now I know you have to go because I know we're bumping up against time here. But let me just touch on this. What do you think of the implications in terms of the Supreme Court? Because that's also one of the big issues on my mind. Is that do you think there is a difference between the picks, Obama's picks for the Supreme Court, and Romney's picks? I mean, obviously we're speculating here, but presume there are two.
Yeah. In a word, yes. Although Obama's picks are a lot less, to use the word, liberal than other Democrats' picks might be. They kind of reflect him. But yeah, there's a difference. But if that is going to be the be all and end all to it, then we will always be slaves to the Democratic Party. If it's the Supreme Court, what about the Supreme Court? If that's the final reason, then why do we even talk about elections if that's the only subject?
Well,
yeah, Republicans pick worse Supreme Courts than Democrats.
How does it work that if Romney wins, we are not slaves to the Democratic Party in 2016? It seems to me that we become that much more, or 2020 for that matter, we become that much more disempowered in terms of the Democratic Party.
I don't quite understand that. In terms of always voting for the Democrat in every presidential election. And by the way, nobody, in case any of your listeners are misinterpreting, nobody here is advocating voting for Republicans. That's never the question.
But I mean, my feeling is that a vote for a third party or staying home at that point is essentially a default. If one was to be typically going to vote for the Democrat, would be a default half vote for Romney.
And I'm telling you that I'm not afraid of Romney. Actually, I'm more afraid of Obama, because Obama is more effective than the Republicans, and he's more effective because we don't fight, and that's how we began the conversation.
All right. Well, I mean, fair enough. I mean, I guess my sense is that there I've seen more fight from the genuine left. Well, I mean, I guess the argument is that it is disempowered or co-opted, I guess, the black community. And that's and I think that's very hard to argue against. You know, we see a black community that is suffering from unemployment in far greater numbers than whites in this country. And yet the President Obama is still going to count on them to come out, and if not numbers at 2008, certainly close to it.
And according to the Pew polls and subsequent polls by others, we have the crazy situation in which black folks are more about the economy, more confident about their individual place in the economy, and more confident about black folks' fortunes and prospects. Economy than any other group, when black folks are worse off than virtually every other group except Native Americans. So that's the kind of delusion that has descended on the community, and that's not conducive to any kind of progressive revival. I've got to go.
Yes, well, I was going to say, Glenn Ford, executive editor of the Black Agenda Report at blackagendareport.com. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate your giving me a couple extra minutes, it's definitely it's been a very tough question for me, and this hasn't made it any easier.
thanks for the opportunity, Sam.
All right, I appreciate it. All right, we've got to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, ping pong. Coming up in the better half of the program, voting purges. Speaking of disenfranchising a lot of black Americans, also Hispanic Americans, and elderly people of all colors. We will talk about the post office, welfare rules, the little tiny experiment that is Kansas that should be fascinating to see what happens. I will take your calls at 646-257-3920 on what Glenn Ford had to say. It is a pretty compelling argument, and certainly one that, well, I don't think I've heard anybody raise on this program before in terms of the massive energy on the left that is being co-opted because the black community is reluctant to, and maybe reluctance is the wrong word. I mean, they have an attachment to the first black president that is, in many ways, co-opting where they would be ideologically, given in other circumstances. So it's a fascinating argument. 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920 is the number. The IM is Majority FM. If you want to reach me via the IM machine. Oh, also, Michelle Bachmann, still crazy. After all these years, weeks, days? Is that a surprise? Folks, your support is what keeps this program alive day to day. And your support is what will continue to keep it alive. Can't put it in any more starker terms than that. Maybe over the weeks ahead, I'll be able to put it in more starker terms. But hopefully, I won't have to. You can become a member today at majority.fm. It is your support that keeps this program alive. Don't take any corporate advertising, I presume justcoffee.coop is probably incorporated in some fashion, but I think we know what I'm talking about. I'm not selling gold, although I know Bush and Chains would like me to. I'm not promoting the lemon wet good sales that Senator, supposed Senator Catherine Harris, who called in to the program, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, was telling us about? She called in the better
Tuesday.
Half.
Tuesday.
Was it Tuesday?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awkward. It was an awkward moment when she called in.
She wasn't very happy with me.
She was not happy with Matt at all. Don't force me to start my own lemon wet good stand to compete with hers. She's charging $500 a cup, apparently, and doing this with, I don't know. She seemed to have the Romney kids' names wrong. But
and on top of that, Sam's meeting with Soros last week didn't go very well.
No. Turns out I have extremely bad table manners. And I'm also rude and inappropriate.
So that money's starting to wear thin, that sweet, sweet Soros money.
That sweet, sweet Soros money is just, you'd be amazed at how far that doesn't take you. All right, folks. So please, if you can afford it, and again, only if you can afford it, become a member today at majority.fm. It is it just pennies per day. Doesn't rate close to how much you spend on caramel macchiatos or whatever it is, Chablis or whatever it is you liberals drink. And certainly doesn't compare to what you pay with cable or, gosh, whatever you spend your money on, REI products or I have no idea what the liberals are doing these days. So become a member today at majority.fm. You can also support the show, of course, by buying coffee from justcoffee.coop and using the coupon code majority. Get 10% off. Get the Majority Report blend. It's fair trade, organic if you want it. Nobody's getting ripped off in that instance. And thankfully, Amazon.com seems to be on the right side of state income taxes these days. So if you buy your junk through Amazon, use our link at majority.fm/support-the-show. Click on it. Bookmark it. Always buy your Amazon junk through there. You will notice zero difference. But we will get a kickback, so the only thing you may notice is just a slightly less anxiety embedded deep in my voice about the future. All right, 646-257-3920, and the IM is Majority FM. See you on the better half side, as it were.